Moin moin und herzlich willkommen zum Podcast Inside Team Building. It's the people stupid. Der Podcast mit Katharina Wolf zu Themen rund um HR in der digitalen Welt. Und ich wünsche euch viel Spaß.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe von Inside Team Building. Heute mit einer totalen Premiere, denn ich sitze hier bei einem ganz tollen Startup und zwar Koya in Berlin, einer ganz neuen Insurtech Company. Und ich sitze hier mit dem CEO, mit Andrew Shaw. Und da Andrew aus Südafrika kommt und sich wohler fühlt, wenn wir das Ganze in Englisch machen, ist es für uns natürlich vollkommen normal, dass wir dem Wunsch nachkommen. Und deswegen starten wir jetzt gleich auf Englisch. Und Andrew, welcome to Inside Team Building. And it's really great that you take your time. And it's a premiere for us. It's the first podcast in English. And I would like to start with your introduction. So, and I don't do the introduction about you. So tell us, what did you do before you founded Koya?
Well, hi. Thanks, firstly, for the invitation to the podcast today. I'm South African, aber ich bin jetzt eingedeutscht.
Ja, deswegen spricht er auch Deutsch.
But English is definitely the preferred language. So yeah, what did I do before Koya? I left South Africa quite a while ago, and after a little bit of traveling around, we often do sort of they call it a work and travel. After school in South Africa, went over to England and just worked odd jobs there, just saving up some money to travel around. I then sort of got quite attached to somebody from Germany, which got me inspired to move over here in 2003.
So you came because of love?
Or follow your passion in life, right?
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. So 2003, quite a while ago. I first ended up in Freiburg in the south of Germany.
Like one of the main cities in Germany, hashtag not.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have, what was it, the Sommermärchen 2006.
Oh yeah,
good year. Football year. So yeah, it was a brilliant city to be in at the time and to be a student in. Gives you a really good impression of sort of like the quality of the German universities and the education and the lifestyle you guys have here. So yeah, I was there from 2003 till 2007. While I was there, I was studying at a South African university, basically through correspondence, risk management, and business management. So a lovely lady at the university there let me do the exams in the university while my actual university was in South Africa. I also sort of participated in the courses at that university, the Albert Ludwig. Just taking merger and acquisitions, going public courses, basically financial courses, and obviously learning a little bit of German at the time. I left them in 2007, going over to London to do a master's degree. There I studied development studies. So as a South African, obviously got a bit of a passion for the developing world and a lot of the problems there.
Oh, yeah.
And what we can do for that. So I ended up studying it for a year at the London School of Economics, which was also awesome being with a group of really international people. And finally, I made a lot of German friends.
Cool.
Which at that time, caused the previous time in Germany. I then went over at the end of my studies to Frankfurt. It was 2008, so financial crisis time. So banking wasn't maybe the best start of the career. So I went into the Git headset. It's not the one controlling your TV, but the one actually developing countries in the third world. So I worked with them for a year on certain development projects, and then realized that I was actually passionate about finance, and then went across to the other side, I guess you could say. I went to an investment bank in Frankfurt where I supported the management team carving out the derivatives trading business from Sal Oppenheim, one of the older German banks, which was selling this business at the time. Deutsche Bank took the wealth management, and Macquarie Bank, who I worked for then, took the derivatives business. So I supported management in new business development. So basically thinking, how could we launch exchange-traded products, which basically listing financial products on the stock market, or the rather the exchanges, and you had to put together all the pieces, right? Talk to all the people within the business, from the traders, the IT teams, the operations teams, risk management, compliance management, every sort of stakeholder in that business, and then compile the product, and then put it through all the approval processes and get it onto the exchange. That was really interesting at the time, but I think the startup yearning came. So I went then in beginning of 2012. I was looking for the next opportunity, and there was one opportunity to go to London with the company I was at, Macquarie, going into sales trading. But I sort of found this little notice in a magazine. And it said, fintech business starting up in Hamburg, business development, chance for equity, more will be revealed later. This is the team. So I said to my girlfriend, I have no idea what this is about, but it looks really interesting, and I'm gonna get in touch with them. So I'd always wanted to do something in the startup space, so looking for it. And I sent them an email in that evening and got an email back the same evening from their recruiter, and yes, awesome, this seems like it could be a fit, can we call tomorrow? So like straight
really
away
fast,
into
yeah.
it. Yeah, it was really fast. They liked sort of my background because I'd done some work on more funky products at the bank, you know, basically taking physical gold backed securities to the exchange and creating workflows around these topics, which was really relevant for what they wanted me to do at Creditech. So,
and you did everything data-based, and Creditech was all about the data.
It was all about the data and creating unique workflows and solving problems through automation. So there, the big thing was using contextual data to make personalized risk decisions to improve the customer experience. Went away across to them, was lucky enough to be their first employee and part of that management team until 2016. So I think the interview was a bit like me walking in there, Sebastian, the CEO at the time, he said, Andrew, you know why you got the job? You kept on looking down at the water pistol.
Okay, that's so like everybody knows Sebastian Diemayer.
yeah. So then, I don't know, we all clicked, and that was an awesome experience. I was with them for 4 years and basically built up the data acquisition part of the business. So where could I find data which could give some indication of the risk worthiness of the individuals applying? I then worked on all the processes to KYC customers to basically figure out who they are online, digitally, and then enable us to pay out money really quickly in the case of them applying for a loan, and obviously working on, so all those topics around data and service levels. Also worked a lot on the customer care infrastructure and these sort of topics. And had two roles in that business. Firstly, the business development officer. So I was working a lot with partners of the business, and then went into the chief information officer, because as I'd built up the first sort of processing framework for the data together with Alexander, I ended up managing a lot of that process myself. So really like hands-on, you build something, you take it to the next level, and eventually you get a really good picture of what's underneath the hood, although you're not coming from a technical background. I just basically learned, you know, what a JVM is and what rabbit queues are and
how did
messaging
you learn
queues
it?
And all those sort of things. Learning by doing.
Okay.
I've always been a fan of learning by doing. Just jump in and be curious and humble and learn quick. Went and learned a lot about the technical infrastructure and JSONs and data sets and what value you could pull out of them. So after having been with that business for 4 years, we did pretty well in the time. I left around about the time of the Series C, so we'd just done a rather large fundraising round. Business was in a good position, and I was kind of inspired to do something leveraging some of the learnings I'd done in that business.
Cool. And you took your experience from getting money to start your own business. Now you run one of the best funded companies in Berlin. You raised around 40 million dollar as a seed round or a round. I'm really looking forward to what's coming next. What kind of number is coming next? I'm really looking forward. You learned, I can think you learned so much at Creditech. So what was the biggest learning you took from Creditech to what helped you building your own company?
I think the importance of the team, the braveness to just do things you haven't done before, super critical. Culture is a really important thing, how you can nurture that. It's all about the team at the end of the day. I think you really need to fit the skills and the attitudes together and be as ambitious as each other and tireless. So I think, it's the team was a good experience I took from there. Also, obviously, learned a lot of technical opportunities, I guess you could say. When you're looking underneath the hood again, you sort of get a lot of ideas for solutions. And that digging deeper into the technical back end was really sort of really helpful for me, I guess.
Perfect.
I think also when you're in a company which is relatively successful, you get the opportunity to build up a network of people. So I built up a really strong network of entrepreneur friends and fellows in Germany and some across Europe. So I think that was one of the really important things which also enabled me to fundraise and get started and get people on board the mission afterwards. You know, when I started at Creditech, I was coming from an investment bank and thinking, what's the downside of this decision, right? Okay, I'm going to take a salary cut. But at the end of the day, that's not the most important thing. I'm going to learn a lot. I'm going to get a community, around that I understand the community, and understand what it takes to build up a company. So that was my downside, you know, learning, and you can always go back, right? If something doesn't work out. So I guess, that was.
It's really great. I love to hear that you say everything is about the team. So what was so special? What did you learn comparing a team in a bank and for example, Creditech at a startup?
Ownership. I think one of the most exhilarating experiences was being able to sit down and build things with your own hands and release those to production and get that feedback and correct it. It felt and then have the people around you who can take ideas you have which put them into action and understand sort of how to do that, which is a good idea, which isn't a good idea, and why. So I think having the people around you and then also the empowerment to just do it and build things, take your own initiatives, that was extremely rewarding, because at the bank you felt like there's a lot of process and hierarchical layers, and you can't get to that level of ownership as quickly.
Yeah.
So I think that was what I really appreciated moving into startups.
Cool. And you took one of your team members to found Koya. One of your co-founders is from Creditech too. So what was first, the idea that you both want to do something together, or the business model?
I didn't take anybody.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
some people did leave around that time, and I wanted to start something similar in the sense of making better risk decisions on individuals to give them a better experience, building up a full stack approach to a licensed business, where you have full control over the product experience. That was sort of in the back of my mind, right? And I thought with the changing world, there's so much opportunity there to leverage technology to create better experiences. And I was looking at the different spaces you could potentially apply that to. You know, looking at the payment space, I had a lot of understanding of that, thinking, hey, do you do something similar again in credit? I would kind of felt, on the one hand, also would have felt a little bit guilty doing that, funnily, having built up your baby at the time, and then you want to do something different.
Yeah.
I had insurance in the back of my mind, and one of the just before leaving Creditech, actually, I had I was down in on one of the floors, and I bumped into Sebastian Villarol, who later co-founded with me. I bumped into him, and he said he's leaving. I'm like, ah, oh, what are you doing? And we went into the copy room, and,
and sounds like a real secret.
He said, yeah, no, I'm leaving, but because I mean, he had already quit and everything. And he said, I'm going to I'm going to the cybersecurity startup, to run their BI, and be in Berlin, closer to the family. And but you know, I've always been inspired by insurance. You know, there's a lot of problems there. I've worked in AGCS, which is the corporate or commercial division of Allianz, and seen sort of some of the opportunities to do things more efficiently in terms of data management. So that was in the back of my head, that I knew, okay, if I go in the insurance direction, there's somebody who's got more idea than I do about the market. You know, I had a solid understanding of certain elements, and on the data side and business development side, and he knew insurance a lot more than I did. So yeah, I went off traveling, just thinking, when you start a business, you're not going to have time.
Yeah.
To do anything besides the business. and that's true, I think. Yeah.
It's really smart. Yeah.
Do it while you can, you know. So I traveled around a little bit. I went off to Indonesia first. I was traveling from Jakarta all the way down to Bali, and ended up getting over then from Bali to Gili Islands, ended up getting really sick, and I was basically in bed for a week, and at some point I needed to go to the doctor. They were overcharging, misprescribing me, and I kind of felt alone at that point in time, especially when I was trying to get hold of my insurance company and ask them, hey, what should I do? I couldn't get hold of them. I didn't have the policy with me. It was just a mission and a bad experience, you know, and I was lying there just pretty much hallucinating for a week. I had chikungunya, which is like a...
What is that?
It's like dengue fever, a lot harder to pronounce.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sounds more funny, yeah.
Yeah, it's some related thing, a similar tropical disease from an insect bite.
Okay.
And and then I kind of felt like I should be having my insurance in my hand and accessing some sort of assistance directly there, and why isn't insurance a bit larger than just the reserving of capital on the site? So I basically thinking, why can't we use technology better to solve the true problems? And yeah, that sort of got me. I firstly like ran back to Germany, like I need to go back somewhere and feel healthy for a few weeks, see my girlfriend. And then I went back to Germany. I obviously caught up with Sebastian, had a good few wines, Chilean wines, he's a big fan, and told him that, hey, this insurance idea is something. And then he said, oh, okay, this is also something I'm still curious with. He was still at the cybersecurity company. I then decided to go off traveling a bit longer, just to sort of really get the idea cemented. I wasn't sort of fully done with the travel experience. I kind of wanted to climb a mountain before I start this business. And I went across to Peru, spent a month there. And the idea sort of like is just like turning around in the back of your head the whole time, and you just thinking about cultural aspects. You're trying to think of a name every day. Yeah. And then I ended up getting again really sick. And then just before I was about to leave, we'd gone up to Machu Picchu, and like you go through whole sort of rainy weather up to the top there, and a couple of days of hiking up and down over the different altitudes, and then basically getting back from Machu Picchu, got super sick for 2 days, and I thought I'm not going to get the chance to do it. I went then, I got better the next morning, went immediately to the closest mountain over 5,000 meters, and
wow.
I hiked up 6,070 meters, came down, and at the bottom of the mountain, I sort of came across, went to a museum, and came across the name Koya.
What? Why?
I was in the museum, and it turns out there was this position. She was basically the princess and then the queen of the Incan society, who were pretty awesome at the time in terms of the fact that they were engineers and sort of navigating the unnavigable. Her role in the society was like protecting them after catastrophes came, you know, nurturing them back to sort of nurturing them back to health and providing for the community. That she spoke directly with the community rather than the king, who was like, you know, disintermediated. They had awesome principles of like reciprocity in the culture driving it, and I thought this is all a pretty good fit to insurance.
Yeah.
And finally the .com was free, so there found a name.
Perfect. No creation. So, like Zalando and so on, they're all names which are created by, I don't know, I take this part from this name
and the other part from another name.
Yeah, okay.
No,
cool.
We took it in as a project name. You work with a project name for like ages, and then at some point you don't want to give it up. And then, like, because I was open, like, guys, okay, is there something better? And then, like, but then at some point we wanted to fix it. So I came back then with the energy and motivation to do it. I kind of felt, I could stay here longer, but I felt I need to get back. Now this opportunity is not going to be here for long, because there is movement and we want to really go all in on this while the opportunity is there. So I came back, I told Sebastian, he said yeah, he would be in if I can get funding, I spoke then to one of my good friends Christian Miele, who was at
Eventures
Partnership and VC, and I met him in a bully at NOAA conference.
Perfect.
Yeah, and I told him the idea, and he said, "Hey, Andrew, this is awesome. We would like to do that."
Did he decide to do it because of you or because of the idea?
I think it's a combination. Like you, at the end of the day, you work with people in this business, so you got to bet on people because that's what's going to carry you through the long run. And I wanted to bet on him, and he wanted to bet on me, I guess, right?
Cool.
It was nice to start a business with somebody who's more of a friend who can also give you direct hard feedback when you need it, and you definitely need it. So I like the idea of starting with him. Obviously, you go through all the processes because nobody is making a decision alone. So you go and meet all the partners, and he helped me also get a further cap table together. So introducing me to strong angel investors and people who had built a lot of businesses, and some sitting on larger PE funds, but others serial entrepreneurs and businessmen. So yeah, helped me round up the cap table, and importantly also introduced me to one of the mavericks who started with us early on, Peter Hagen. So he introduced me to Peter, who was the first deep insurance experience in the team.
Cool.
So his history was basically had been in the industry for 30 years in insurance, had gone across to a market which was disrupting in Eastern Europe when the wall fell, and basically he built up or was one of the drivers building up the Vienna Insurance Group. Mm-hmm. Who is the market leader in Eastern Europe, 19% market share versus Generali, which is like 11% runner-up. So he had tremendous experience. He ended his career at Vienna Insurance Group as the CEO of the group. So he had a wealth of knowledge, which we could embed in the business really early on. So he joined then a couple of months later when we finalized our seed round. Yeah, so he joined as a co-founder and helped us in the initial stages. So yeah, I guess the idea came first, or the passion, the idea, the conviction, the team, the money, in that order.
Followed. Yeah. And but you have a fourth board member. So he's from the Allianz, right?
Yes.
Because you needed two members who worked in the insurance industry before to get your license.
Yeah. So in this business, it's a very serious undertaking, and you need to really blend the knowledge and experience of the industry with technology and different more agile approaches. So at one stage, Peter had said, oh, listen, this is pretty cool what you guys are telling me on the back end and what you're building. But I want to sort of just get one of my friends to come and help out and advise us, who was Thomas Munkel, who he knew from his past career. Thomas had been he had also done a lot of built up a massive insurance company, billion plus revenue in Eastern Europe. As the CEO, he came in and he had also been with Allianz Group, and had in that process obviously done a massive amount of due diligence on startups and technologies for back end and servicing. So he came in to have a look at what we were doing, and he got kind of excited about it and basically saying, yeah, this is the first truly digital opportunity or undertaking he's seen, and this has been his vision too for a long time. So that was around 18 months after we launched, and then he joined the business to help us set it up. In the beginning phases, he joined our management board in the chair in the initial phases, and was really, really helpful and important in setting up, firstly, a strong governance framework. This is a serious business, and so we have a very strong governance setup, helping us also sort of make certain decisions in the right phase early on that we don't sort of encounter them later. And obviously giving a lot of trust to the business again early on, having two such strong people on board.
But I can imagine that working at the Allianz is maybe a little bit comparing to your experience at the bank. So definitely working in another way, not agile and so on. So what was the biggest, or was there a cultural clash, or was it like normal working with the industry guy?
I guess this is a very complex business to solve, put it this way. Like, you need a lot of different people with different experiences and talents, and that will often lead to certain conflicts which are also healthy. I think the important thing is that everybody is always humble and can accept that they need to learn, right? So I needed to learn, other people in the business needed to learn, people who come from a more waterfall sort of insurance world also needed to learn. Yeah. So you have to really work a lot on getting a common culture. You have to work a lot on how do we create an agile culture where we're working together on smaller problems and talking in the right way with each other. So yeah, a lot of cultural work we had to do, but I think this is one of the most awesome assets you can also develop, because you will not develop this in a larger corporation. You will not get this in Allianz, you will not get this in AXA. You may have it in your front end development team, but that is not your core insurance. We had, for example, at some stage, we had certain communication topics where just the languages people were speaking were different. And that obviously led to a lot of frustration at the time. One of the cool things we did was we let the team go off for a week to basically a big house outside of Berlin in the countryside. And that was like our top engineers, our back-end guys, data engineers, DevOps, the actuarial, the risk manager, and
so the
product underwriters. Yeah. Exactly. No, we had a full stack team, right?
Perfect.
Basically, that was our first sort of product, or true insurance product squad, right? We work in agile squads, and we put them together for a week, and they were given the task of creating a new product engine. And the coolest moment was when they came back from that week and my risk manager said to me, "Hey Andrew, this is awesome what we built," right? And when he gets excited, I get excited myself, right?
Perfect.
So yeah, putting them together, solving a smaller task together, communicating in a different way—these are challenges you face. But I think you face challenges in any startup. this one perhaps more, given the heavily regulated nature and also being sort of a tech-first company where we're trying to use the latest approaches to things. So yeah, that's a constant work, and at the end, yeah.
Cool.
Very worthwhile work.
But what did you learn, or were there some learnings from the old way of management? I think I would find in the Allianz if I would ask them.
I think a lot of the people topics really don't change. You know, how do people sort of behave? I think there's a tremendous amount of learnings which are timeless, right?
Yeah.
I think there may be certain different ways to say things in different days. But solving a lot of the people problems, I think, or organizational topics, there's certainly a lot you can take from that world.
Okay.
But I mean, I think a lot of things are also very different in our world, right? So it's a common learning.
Yeah. So did you get better as a leader through your experience working with some more experienced guys?
Yeah, I'm sure I did. Yeah, yeah? Of course. So I think you, but you, yes.
What did you learn? Like, how would you describe yourself as a leader? What did you learn in leadership? Was important? What helped you to grow your company or to grow the team while not losing so many people?
I think, yeah, every journey is personal. I think for me, one of the things I've learned to do a lot better is give more early direct feedback to people. I think this is maybe one of the things I was a little bit weaker on in the beginning.
Like how early?
Like be as direct and quick as possible, you know?
Okay.
This is because if you do come to an issue later, you know, it's just it's not fair to do it really early and be direct, right? I think as an individual, I avoided certain conflicts and tried to please situations too much. But those are things you got to solve in yourself, and then actually just be be direct and fearless about the way you do things. So I think that's just the journey you go through yourself as a founder.
And how would you describe your style of management? You seem like a boss who's really down to earth. You seem like to be very nice and kindly. So not maybe like the typical startup founder in Berlin. You work with Sebastian Diemer, so I had to say that. How would you describe your style of management or your style as a leader?
I believe a lot in selfless leadership. You know, if you're going into to be a CEO of a company and you think, "Hey, I want to be the boss. I want to be independent and make all the decisions," you're doing the wrong thing, right? I think you will learn very quickly that you're there for your team and that you're serving them endlessly. I believe a lot in a leader culture where decisions are put towards the team, and try and encourage this a lot in the company. So that's also for me as a rugby player, sort of, I did a lot of rugby in my youth.
Yeah, cool.
Sorry. And one of the things you have in those teams is that you never have one leader. Yeah. You have a group of leader, a team of leaders, all standing up and complimenting each other and looking out for each other. So I think it's about developing a group of strong leaders around you who are humble and are taking ownership and stepping in when they need to and not complaining and causing friction. Like you need to have a strong leader culture, and these are things you can also you can work on them, right? You can also work on them through the communication style where you communicate, you know, what you intend to do, why you intend to do it, and what you've considered upwards, right? So decisions start being made where the information is rather than always top down. These are,
cool. And how do you find these people who are willing to take ownership, who are willing to be part of your company, who want to be part of your team? So how do you find it, and what is important to you?
I think there's two things. The best people I worked with, they're humble. They respect that they don't know anything and they need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And they take ownership over themselves and their own development, mm-hmm. right? If you're coming to a startup and you expect to have a career plan and have all of that laid out, you're coming to the wrong place, right? If you expect to have a full training and educational program set up from day one or early days of a startup, you're probably also in the wrong place. You can communicate that, but it's up to you at the end of the day to develop yourself, right? You can read, you can get inspired, you can get curious and learn, right? So it's up to the individual their attitude to develop themselves. Obviously, a company should support them with good training and when they've shown that initiative, but you bring them to the water, right? They still got to drink themselves.
Yeah. Okay. And do you think there is a difference in the culture between people you hire from Germany and with an international background? Is it a different? I don't know. Expectations of how work is done.
Probably yes. I couldn't put a finger out exactly. I think it's an asset to blend them. And to learn from each other, I think I've also worked with a whole ton of different German personality types. I think it's a tough one to answer. But
you hired.
It was awesome that we had like also a international team of people, and we're always learning from each other, yeah. right? And we got the same thing here, and I think the people appreciate that a lot.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's we don't really have this German or non-German thing at Koya. You know, we had conversations around, okay, this is an insurance sort of perspective on a topic. This is a technology perspective on a topic. We've got different, we're perhaps not the typical startup where we're all under 30. You know, we're really sort of a more distributed age group with some under 30, quite a few between 30 and 40 in the business. Some which are a little bit more experienced than that. So yeah.
Okay. You say it's really important for you that the people you hire are humbled and willing to learn. How do you find out if they are? Like in an interview, what do you ask them? If I would ask you, hey, Andrew, are you humbled and do you want to learn? Everybody would say yes, I think. So. How do you find out if it's really in their DNA or if they are just talking about it?
It's a good question, and I probably need to improve on actually having specific questions for that. Mm-hmm. I don't think I actually do that. For me, to be honest, it's been more of a feeling.
A
gut feeling. Yeah. You know, I've probably met a lot of people, and I can have a feeling if they're humble or not.
Okay.
I guess you pick it up somehow, but. You know, are they admitting mistakes? Are they admitting to learning?
Will
be indicators. Yeah.
Do you give a lot to references?
We do cultural interviews in the company.
Yeah.
So it's not just skills. It's a mistake to just hire for skills, and everybody knows that, but it's so true. So we go through obviously multiple stages of our interview process, and every candidate goes through a cultural interview where they meet people which are cultural ambassadors and not really specifically related to their team.
Ah, okay. Cultural ambassador. Sounds mm-hmm. really great. And how many time do you spend on these people topics? Like how many time do you spend on building products and how do you spend on people topics?
50% people topics, 50% fundraising and 50% sales.
Okay, you work a lot. I get it. Okay. And what is your favorite part?
Tough to say. Depends on the people topic. We love working with people. Some of them can be really tough. I mean, it feels like even more than that, like 60, 60, 60 maybe. yeah.
Okay.
I enjoy sort of talking through the business also with investors. I do a lot of that and because they're also really smart, they've seen a lot of perspectives and they can challenge you on a lot of things. So that for me is also engaging. And sales, yeah, I like thinking about opportunities and value for people and triggers and those sort of topics. But I wouldn't say I like hard selling. I don't sell something I don't believe in.
Mm-hmm. If you work 50% or 150% on topics or on people, on investors, how do you structure your day? If you have to work, I think you have a workload which is not very easy to get through every day. So how do you structure yourself? Do you have, I don't know, email time and time for interviews, or is there a special structure?
Well, I've got up at 4 a.m. four times this week.
Okay.
That's not my regular habit. Wow. I wish it was. I'm not one of those people.
But
I had to
do it
this week. No, I've been traveling a lot this week.
Okay.
You have to work on that. And I think I need to work more on that still. I do set sort of a most important tasks slot in the beginning of the day. Get out of bed, try and do some yoga or meditation sort of 40 minutes before the day starts. Try and set like a most important task for like an hour and a half in the beginning of the day, 8 to 9:30. Try and set up email time that you're not just on your phone the whole time, but you can focus and be in the moment.
Really
and,
important.
And,
yeah.
And be prepared to do a lot of extra hours and
yeah. Cool. And you say you are humbled and you like to learn every day. So how do you learn? Like through reading books or listening to podcasts, or how do you manage to learn every day?
How do I manage to learn? Be curious and humble.
Okay.
I think when you put into this position, you got so much pressure on you that you only have one choice, and that's learn. Like it's swim or don't swim. And so you're forced more than other roles to actually develop yourself as a starting point. I know that the jump up from being a first employee at Credit Tech, which was just all a heck of a lot of fun building something like that, to the challenges you face when you're in a CEO sort of position and you have pressure from all angles, you're forced even more to develop yourself and take charge of that. Like firstly, how are you making your decisions yourself? Are you overcoming sort of basic inhibitors and saboteurs to make proper decisions and quick decisions? But then once you get over that, you start changing your habits, right? Like, how do I take charge of my habits? Oh, I can do it with triggers and rewards, and you sort of start figuring out how to change your habits. I advise everybody in this position to take a coach to work.
Do you have
with
a coach?
I have a coach. Yeah, cool. Yeah. I work on a lot of topics with, and it's just great to look at yourself, because when you solve that problem, you can start solving all the problems that come afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Being in control there. And I guess actually starting there, I've been doing just reading a lot more books, audio files now and again, but just reading more and being curious at night. You know, you get home at night and you don't want to, it's been pretty late, you don't really have the energy to dive into a book at that stage, but you'll maybe watch some YouTube and like what's an interesting sort of topic to brush up on, something interesting, a TED talk or something.
Yeah.
Just cool. Look into that. I think that's what I meant about taking charge. Like, I think the best employees will take charge. I mean, in this position, it's not, you're just forced to do it, but yeah. I think the best employees will do it with themselves.
Yeah. Because they're interested.
They're interested. Yeah. Curious and humble.
Perfect. I think you answered a lot of my last question, because your next meeting is waiting in front of our door. What is your individual formula on being successful? Is it only being humbled, learning, or do you have, I don't know, some special things in your character why you are more successful, like than maybe 99% of the other?
It feels like you're not successful yet, but the belief, opportunity, and hard work. I think it all starts with belief, and not everybody has that. So you've basically got to believe in something so hard that you can also start gathering momentum behind it, right? You got to convince other people of it. You got to get up every day when you knock down and keep on going. So you really got to believe in something. But this is also something you can basically trigger in your own brain. You can cognitively wire your brain, right? That's belief, opportunity. So providing opportunities for people to actually do something, get empowerment there, and seizing the opportunity when it's there and realizing it, just going as hard as you can, and hard work. It's a tireless effort, right? You just got to keep on working, and you get knocked down, you get up, and you get knocked down, you get up. I think it's like it's a bit like rugby.
Yeah, boxing.
I don't know. Yeah. So belief, opportunity, and hard work. Nothing comes for free. Perfect. You know, and even if it looks successful, there's a heck of a lot of work going into that.
Perfect. Thank you, Andrew. That was really much fun. And if somebody listened to this podcast and want to get a part of this team, then you're looking for so many people, engineers and data scientists and so on. They should have a look at your website and having write an email to your wonderful head of HR, Janine. So that was the advertising part. And I thank you a lot. I'm really curious to see and looking forward to see what Koya is doing in the next years and which number is on the next B round.
It's going to be exciting, I promise you that.
Yeah, that's great. So good luck for you and your team, and thanks for having me here.
Yeah, thank you for the time.